You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
I've bought for my uncle already, I know we're in March, but I've bought him for Christmas a Bielsa bucket because he hosts Christmas and there's never enough chairs.
I absolutely love it. The thing is, Bielsa's the only guy I could pull that off because it's quite Godfather-like. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, this is my spot and I make of it what I want. It's like,
If anybody else did that, it would spell breakdown.
Exactly. Imagine Alan Pardew doing that or Roy Hodgson. It just wouldn't work.
Any of the others, like, if Sean Dyche pulled out a bucket, you'd be like, oh, he's fallen on hard times, hasn't he? Has his pay not come through yet?
That's the best example.
Someone get him a chair.
Sean Dyche.
That would have big divorce dad energy.
Football. At the end of the day, football, it's a funny old game,
it's a game of two hours.
Comedians talking about football,
comedians talking about football,
comedians talking about football.
Welcome to episode 15 of Comedians Talking About Football. We're about to talk all things Leeds, Leeds, Leeds with our brilliant guest, Maisie Adam. Before then, I just quickly want to encourage you to subscribe if you haven't yet done so, and to let you know about our YouTube channel. We've just got over 1,000 subscribers on there, so if you search Comedians Talking About Football into YouTube, we should come up. We've got loads of extra bits on there that you might enjoy, including video clips from this very episode and our recently posted special where four comedians attempt to dissect the recent European Super League fiasco. Oh, what a mad 48 hours that was. It's the way the owners expected no reaction whatsoever. But no, what did they get? Players and managers revolting, an angry Gary Neville rant, and fans protesting as they face the prospect of their team possibly never again challenging for the Premier League title. Or as it's otherwise known, a typical Saturday being a Manchester United fan. Anyway, my guest for this episode, you've no doubt seen recently on programmes such as Mock the Week, Have I Got News For You, and Would I Lie To You. She's one of my favourite comedians out there at the moment, and we have a really good chat about comedy coming up, which includes some excellent advice for any up-and-coming comics. Born in Pownall, North Yorkshire, she's a lifelong fan of Leeds United, so it was great to get her on the podcast as Leeds come to the end of their first season in the top flight of English football for 16 years. This is Maisie Adam talking about Leeds United. Maisie Adam, thank you for joining us. Comedians Talking About Football.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here.
We're going to talk about Leeds, Leeds, Leeds.
Leeds, Leeds, Leeds. At long last, back where we belong, baby.
Well, we'll talk about the infamous season where you were promoted at long last after all those years away from the top flight. Let's talk a little bit about this season, because this sounds horrible. I quite enjoy watching Leeds at the moment because you never know what you're going to get.
Like, we don't do it by halves, do we?
No. Like, I'm looking at the results now. I thought I'd get them up and they're ridiculous. So for 1 minute, you're beating West Brom 5-0. You'll beat Newcastle 5-2, and then you'll lose to like Crystal Palace 4-1.
I know.
The weirdest.
You hear it when you hear the pundits say, like, as a neutral, Leeds are one of the most exciting to watch, and you can 100% see why, because if we win, we win well, and if we lose, we lose well. We know how to lose. That's one thing we've acquired as a good skill.
Yeah,
I'd say over the years is we put on a show, even if that means we're putting on a show in how to lose. Like we'll go full whack either way. It's never a dull match. There's nothing, and I don't think there's anything worse than them than ones that just drag on forever and ever and ever and ever, and it's a draw, and it's just. What was that? It's not entertaining.
Well, you've only had 2-0 results this year, and they are, to be fair, against Arsenal or Chelsea. So it's not like a disappointing game where you're going to end up last on match of the day. But how do you think Bielsa's settling into the Premier League? It's amazing to have a manager like him now playing in English football, let alone in the top flight.
Yeah, I mean, I adore the man. I absolutely adore the man. I love how weird he is, and I think he's exactly what we need. I don't understand how he squats for that long. I am probably a third of his age. I couldn't do that. He's I think he's magical. I sound like every single Leeds fan who absolutely licks his ass, but I do. I think he's incredible, and I think this was always going to happen with him in charge. Was for us to be back in the Premier League, and I think that's where he's not perfect. He makes some proper rash decisions, but I think he is at his best managing us in the top flight.
Yeah, cool. Do you know who I quite like as well? I quite like his interpreter.
Yes,
I've come to like. Yes. He's become a bit of a fan favorite himself, hasn't he?
It's such a strange dynamic, isn't it? After the in the post match interview, I love that he doesn't even look up Bielsa. He just stares at the floor. The young lad, the interpreter, looks absolutely terrified for his life the whole time. You want the camera to pan down to see if there's any funny business going on. Any sort of like he's standing on his toes, telling him what to say. Yeah, I love it. It's got a bit of a Godfather vibe, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. It has. It's like match the day I'm not worthy to speak to Bielsa. You have to speak for an interpreter.
Also, like there's all this that they've now started. Like a lot of the journalists reckon Bielsa can speak the language very well. Like you can sometimes hear, especially now that we can't hear the crowd noise on some of the games, you can hear Bielsa shouting very detailed English instructions at the players, and then he'll come to do the post-match interview and he's like no, I'm gonna need an interpreter for this.
What I love as well is you're talking about the little things he does, especially like pitch side. He does the squatting thing. I like the whole thing of bringing a chair out and sitting on it with it like folded arms. And I've noticed I've been doing a bit of work recently with non-league teams down in the south of England, and in non-league, so it's Conference League South, I've noticed some managers doing that. It's the funniest thing. And these are like guys in their early 30s. And it was, who was the team? I can probably name it. Chippenham.
They're bringing out their own little like Bielsa buckets.
Yeah, Chippenham Town FC. He bought out what I think was like a cooler, and he popped it down. It was like one of the first games of the season for them. Unfortunately, that whole non-league season's gone now, but he propped it down and just sat on it, one leg up, arms folded. We all just sort of sat there going, is he doing what we think we're doing?
I love it. This is the inspiration the man has. I've bought for my uncle already, I know we're in March, but I've bought him for Christmas a Bielsa bucket because he hosts Christmas and there's never enough chairs because my family's absolutely massive. And it always ends up with like some of us sat on the carpet, like passing drinks down the line. Like, and basically you have to be a pensioner to sit. That's how it works. So I've bought him a Bielsa bucket for an emergency chair option.
Absolutely love it. I think it's Bielsa's the only guy I could pull that off because it's quite Godfather like. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, it's kind of like this is my spot and I make of it what I want. It's like
yeah. If anybody else did that, it would spell breakdown.
Yeah, but imagine
him With him, it's mind games.
Exactly. Imagine Alan Pardew doing that or Roy Hodgson. It just wouldn't work.
Any of the others, like, yeah, if Sean Dyche pulled out a bucket, you'd be like, oh, he's falling on hard times, hasn't he? Has his pay not come through yet?
That's the best example.
Someone get him a chair. Come on.
Sean Dyche.
That would have big divorced dad energy.
Yeah.
Whereas Bielsa, you're like, I respect that.
That is exactly that. His divorced dad who's got a little bit tired at the barbecue sort of look for Sean Dyche.
Yes.
So it's great they're back in the top flight. And and it's been a real struggle to get back there, shall we say, after the last few years. And it must be frustrating being a Leeds fan because, you know, they are... I think technically speaking, they're, especially fan-wise, they're the biggest team in the country because there is no Leeds City. There was once, obviously, but there's no like Leeds City, Leeds whatever, it Leeds Athletic.
One team town, yeah.
Yeah, one team town, one team city. And it's like, they've got such a huge base. And for all those seasons to kind of finish 12th, 13th, 14th, it's not even like you got to enjoy a relegation battle. No. It's this kind of mid-table...
Just floating for it. That's what it felt like. You know, this will sound so dramatic. You can tell I've got a drama degree. But you know that place that people say you go to if you're not bad enough to go to hell, but you've not got into heaven.
Purgatory,
you
know,
when you're just sort of floating, and it's just this state of non-existence, nothingness. That's what it felt like. That's what the championship years felt like. It's just very. Just monotonous and knowing we had it, we deserved, but not always deserved, but as in the long run, deserved better and should never have been down that far. It just felt really lost, genuine, and like not to sound all emotional, but it felt very lost as a club because, as you say, a huge fan base. And that as well is one of the things that like, it's so Leeds, a team that has got such a ferocious fan base, such a distinctive atmosphere when you talk about what other clubs say about coming to Welland Road. And the year they get back up into the top flight is the year it's literally illegal for the fans to come and watch. It's heartbreaking.
Do you think that's had an effect on the season? Because Elland Road is such... It's just got such an atmosphere there. I mean, if you are in, like... Yeah. What is it? Is it the North Stand? I might have that wrong, but where literally you can suck in a goal with that much noise and that much atmosphere. And do you think that had they been there for the first season back, Leeds would be possibly higher in the table?
It's so difficult to say. I feel like with any other team, you'd be able to go, yeah, absolutely. But Leeds are so fiery and we've not done like. It's very easy to get frustrated with Leeds when we lose the ones we do. But if you'd have told us that we'd be, I think we're 11th at the moment. Like at this point, and it's our first season back. We've done incredible, and we've made like really obvious stupid mistakes as well. But I think by and large, I think it would make a difference. Don't get me wrong, in terms of how it feels like and how the matches are played. Maybe the scores wouldn't have been as dramatic as they've been. I don't know if you'd be getting the 5-1s, the 4-0 wins, that kind of thing. But for the first season back, I don't think we'd be any higher than we are with the fans. I don't know if that's pessimistic to say, but it's a tough one, isn't it? It's a tough one because I think. As you say, like look at how much we floated around in the championship, and we had the fans then, and we were just floating in nothingness. So maybe it's not gone for them, of course not, but maybe it's allowed them to focus on like get their head out of all of the politics that's ensuing around them.
Well, that's interesting. You're the first person who's come on to give that other side of the argument. Other than we had a special episode with Charlie Austin. Came on.
Right, yeah.
Striker. And I asked him how he felt about, because it was just before football came back in lockdown. And I asked him how he felt about, you know, playing without fans. And I expected him to give the kind of the media train response of, you know, oh, we are nothing without the fans. We appreciate the fans. It won't feel right. And he just went, yeah, sod it.
I'm probably going to prefer it. He says, I've had, and Charlie Austin, obviously quite an outspoken guy, saying, to be honest, when we're like 1-0 down after 10 minutes, you've got the fans on your back for the remaining 80. That doesn't help. I'd rather play with no fans in that situation.
I know. And I think, especially with the players that Bielsa is very clearly trying to bring up to you know, the younger ones of the, you know, to Tyler Roberts, this sort of player.
Mm.
You only have to go on Twitter to see how much the fans give him stick if he messes up. So, I mean, I'm very aware that a lot of people could watch this and go, oh, she's so emotional about it. Like, it's a very... So you're always aware, as well as a woman on a football podcast as well, of giving that side of things, of being like, think of Tyler Roberts' feelings. But I do think there's an argument for allowing those players to find... I mean, blooming Melia, what is it, 20, 21? Mm. Like, they're learning, and it's not like Bielsa, when they cock up, is going... Never mind, guys, we go again. He's giving them a bollocking. Yeah. He's giving them an absolute bollocking. They get to, you know, look at, I mean, I think Robin Koch was incredibly inconsistent at the start of the season. I think it was reflected with how little he's played since then. I don't think they're getting an easy ride. I think they're being put to the test, all of the Leeds players. But I do think there's probably a different process they go through without the fans there breathing down their necks, because as much as we lift them up and support them, we also apply the heat, and we're very, very passionate, as are any football fans. But Leeds especially, it means so much more because of where we've been for over a decade, and it means so much to be back that I think it's probably maybe even a blessing in disguise to have our first season back,
okay,
and it just have the players with their heads in the stadium, with just the, you know, just the coaching staff around.
It is interesting. I mean, it makes you think as well. There are certain clubs, certainly the club I support, Reading. We've got a player called Michael Olise, who's 19 years old, and he's arguably the best player in the Championship this season, and he's only actually played about 8 or 9 games in front of a crowd. He's gone this whole season without players, and maybe that's taken the pressure off of him to perform to this next level. And there must be other players. You think players who are sort of coming through at the moment, you see a new player come through and you think, have they ever actually played in front of a crowd at this level? So it is going to be interesting when fans come back in, and if it's going to affect the league in any way.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, especially with Leeds, I feel like we've got a lot of our established players. If you think of Cooper and Ayling, they've done all that. They're 29 now, you know. But I think for the younger ones that Bielsa is trying to bring up from the younger squads, I think it's going to only help them to get their first taste of the Premier League without the fans giving them flack.
Yeah.
For making pretty elementary mistakes, but I think, that by the time the fans are back, it can be hopefully at a point where they've got the first few jitters out of them, and the fans only help elevate the support that they feel.
No, absolutely. And how about you? Because I know nowadays you yourself live down south, but then did you used to get to Leeds quite a lot when you were up there?
A fair bit. It's difficult. I was down at uni for most of the time, and then I'd come back. I actually only lived up in Yorkshire for like the year after graduating, and then moved down here.
Mm.
So most of my Ellen Road memories are from when I was at high school and was being taken by family members then. Whereas I didn't really get much time as a young adult, really, to go, which is why I can't blooming wait until the fans are back now, because the Amex is like 2 stops on the train.
Oh, cool.
Like there's you might even be able to hear the train going past every now and then, but I'm right by a train track. It's 2 stops. We're laughing. And the Amex is, I think it's a great stadium. And I do quite enjoy watching Brighton play, actually. I think it's one of the few things that makes you feel more calm about being a Leeds fan. Like, being a Leeds fan can be testing, can be tough at times. But me and my boyfriend, we both watch the Brighton games and go, I just can't. It's so infuriating because they're good enough to be in the Premier League. Mm. They just can't execute shit. They just, it's so infuriating for them. I really feel for them. So especially when we get Leeds and Brighton games playing just down the road, I can't wait for that.
Let's go back then to the season before this happened, because that was Bielsa's first season and it felt like that was really gonna take off for Leeds that year. I don't remember the amount of attention around Bielsa when that happened. Well, there's kind of two people, wasn't it? It was that season. It was all about Bielsa at Leeds and Frank Lampard at Derby, and it was kind of, you know, meant to be that they would meet at some point in the fight for promotion. And there was obviously that infamous playoff semi-final, which was just unbelievable. I mean, as again, and I hate hearing this as a fan who's gone through something like this, but as a neutral, it was incredible to see what happened that night. What were your memories of it, in particular the second game? Because you'd done the first game, the first leg, and it all seemed to be going well for Leeds. And then you go to the second leg, and what happened. What was your memory of watching that game?
If I remember this correctly, I was watching this at my mate's house, who is a Bristol City fan.
Right.
And so I was feeling quite smug, I'll be honest. I was like, here we go. We've got this. We're like, see you in another life, pal. It goes back to what we were saying at the start, doesn't it? Nothing is ever a given with Leeds. It's never, ever a given. We are that team where you could be like 3-0 up in the 90th minute and you still wouldn't probably sit back in your seat until the ref's blown his whistle. It was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. It's so difficult to say it without getting too like emotionally biased with it, but it did feel, the word I'm thinking is unfair. It felt unfair. And I don't mean through anything specific within the match, just the whole, it felt ultimate Leeds, that situation, you know?
I hate those things because it's like you're not in control of it. Yeah. You can't do anything. And it's horrible. Because I mean, I've been there myself. I mean, as a Reading fan, we've lost 3 playoff finals and I've been to 2 of them at Wembley. And it's horrible. And we lost on a penalty shootout. And there's nothing worse because it's the only time I've been present in a stadium for any kind of shootout. And it was for that. And it was huge. And there's the weirdest thing when you're on one half of the stadium of Wembley, just like 50,000 of you, 50,000 of them. And then when their player put it away and they won it, there's nothing weirder than you being stood with 50,000 people in complete silence while seeing 50,000 people roar at you. You can actually feel them like roaring
it's
at
horrible.
You.
Horrible.
Yeah, it's so bad. That was Huddersfield as well. So your rival.
Oh.
So, there you go. So it is unfair. And I just can't imagine how that must have felt. Because the thing is, that game that I'm giving you an example of now, I think it was playoff final 2017, it was 0-0. So it was always going to be kind of 50-50. But with you guys, that first leg, I think you won it 2-0, didn't you?
It was in the bag. It was in the bag.
And then you scored first as well in the second leg, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, it's what you're saying then about being 3-0 up and still not. I mean, that's a whole game won. And then you're at home. Like, I didn't understand how it crumbled.
All the signs would suggest you're going to sail right through here. Mm. And that's what I mean. It, with Leeds, you kind of learn to not be ever led into a false sense of security because nothing is ever. And I do feel like that's something that you notice now we're in the Premier League as well. There are those certain clubs that feel like, well, it could get bad, but it won't get too bad. You know, if you're talking like I guess at the moment, well, certainly at the start of the season, Arsenal were having it with their defence, just being like, oh, it's horrendous, it's awful, you know, and everything they went through, I guess, with Wenger leaving, you're like, oh, it gets bad, but it doesn't get bad, you know? It doesn't feel like you've been cheated out of something. It doesn't feel unfair. And I don't think I'm saying that just as a fan of Leeds.
Yeah.
I think I'm saying that as a feeling that is specific to a club that seems to just have the record that Leeds does. That they it's just that thing of I feel like with other clubs it can go bad, but you know there's a degree to how all right you're going to be.
Yeah, and it's a funny thing with Leeds as well, because to me, like, I'm 32, so I remember clearly Leeds in the Premiership in the 90s and the early 2000s, yeah. You know, getting to, you know, Champions League quarterfinals and all that stuff. So so to me, it was always like, oh, they've not been gone that long. Yeah. Like, I don't see what the fuss is about. But then you sort of think, God, actually, it's been this many years. You know, yeah. that's quite crazy. And what shocks me now is you see, like, in the so for example, that semi-final match, you see the young Leeds fans, and I'm suddenly looking at them thinking, but if they're like 18, 19, 20, they don't even remember being in the Premier League. Do you have clear memories of it?
There's fans like who haven't been to their first proper Leeds game yet.
Yeah.
And as long and the games they have been, like, as in the whole time that they have grown up being a Leeds fan, it's not been a Premiership team. Mm. It's that this is so alien for them. Whereas for the majority, it's a return to where we should be. Mm. For a whole generation of fans, it's, oh my God, I can't believe we've got to the top flight.
Yeah.
Because when they started, Leeds were in dire straits.
Exactly. I mean, they missed out on a whole kind of generation of footballers. If you think like the era of Cristiano Ronaldo, Rooney, Giggs and all these various players, you know, Lampard, Gerrard, they missed out on all of that, which is just, for me, obviously there have been cup meetings and all that, but there has been this whole kind of lost generation of where, and the idea of Leeds not being up there for that long is now when you look at their full history. Is unimaginable, really. Do you think you're going to be safe now? Do you think that Premier League is where you're going to stay?
Yes, I do. I do. I think we're in good hands. Sorry, there's drilling going on at the... can you hear that?
No, I can't hear it. It's fine. Okay, you're good.
Yes, I do think we'll stay where we are. I think for the first time in a long, long time, we're in good hands, not just from a like manager's perspective, but as a club. I think there's a lot of faith that's been restored in, I can never say his name, Radrizzani. I think for a long time, that faith had gone in the club as a business. You know, there was a lot of emotional attachment from the fans still, but there was a lot of betrayal that had gone on financial wise, and you forget that is half of what makes the club. You know, it is a business at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And I think for the first time in a long time, the people who are pulling the strings at Leeds are people who care about the club.
Yeah. No, I think that's great. I mean, did you see the documentary Take Us Home? Yeah. That really kind of made me. Yeah, it made me kind of. I mean, I think I could watch any of those shows. I mean, I've never liked Sunderland in my life.
No.
I've not been Leeds' biggest fan, but watching any documentary about them, you go, "Oh God, there's so much that goes on," you know, in these, and especially like the what was the episode that really got me? It was when you were trying to sign a player on deadline day.
Oh, was it Ben White?
It might have been. Was it? Yeah. Was it the guy who ended up? Was it James?
That's
it, and it all
went down to the last.
Like he's having his picture taken with the shirt,
and everything. He's going for his medical,
and it all falls
There's
through
so much,
and he's crying. The guy trying to put the deal through is literally crying. Grown man, it's like my God, that's the difference that it makes. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to hit you with actually you'll see where I've ripped this off from because I know you were recently on Richard Herring's podcast.
Oh yeah,
and he does emergency questions.
Yes,
and what I do emergency facts.
Okay.
I hit you with the facts, see if you've heard of it before.
I love this because I need facts. I need some good facts. I've had like the same few facts for a while, so I'm ready for this. I'm going to rip off your facts.
All right. Well, they might be ones you've heard of already, so we'll see if you've heard of them before. I think these are two quite obvious ones. I'll start with them. So Leeds went from playing in gold and blue to white because manager Don Revie wanted them to be the Real Madrid of Yorkshire.
I mean, I just love that's a sentence, the Real Madrid of Yorkshire.
That's what's in his words. He went, you know, I want them to play in white now. They're going to be...
I love it. It's very much, it's the kind of thing you try and say to like your French exchange when they're visiting. Like, oh, I'll take you to a Leeds game. We're like the Real Madrid of Yorkshire. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that very much that would have worked in the 60s. But if you're trying to pull that off in 2012,
not quite
going to work. Yeah. So here's another interesting one. Before there was Leeds United, there was Leeds City. The club was formed in 1904 and played at Elland Road, managed by pre-war legend Herbert Chapman at one stage. During the First World War, however, the club came under fire for illegal payments to footballers and they were expelled from the Football League, with the new United side forming in the Midland League.
I did not know that. I knew about Leeds City, but I did not know this.
Mm.
Wow.
Controversial.
Yeah.
Controversial. Yeah. We'll have more of them to come. I'm glad so far, so good.
I feel like that sets a precedent though, doesn't it? Like we should have known from then we were gonna be a controversial, spicy club.
It's a funny old game. Talking about football.
I wanted to talk quickly about Calvin Phillips, obviously first England capped player for quite a long while. Do you think he's going to be in the Euro 2020/2021 squad?
I think he should be. I think he's an amazing player. And it's obviously always lovely when you've got a Leeds lad who, again, it comes back to that, you see the club as a, obviously as a business commodity, but also as something that people put their entire heart and being into. Mm. And I think Calvin Phillips is one of those players. I think he's more than equipped to represent on an international level. And I think his place in Leeds shows that. You see how he is with the younger players as well. Bearing in mind, he's not exactly, you know, Pablo Hernandez veteran or anything. he's got the maturity. I think he's got captain in him. I think he's a real asset to the team, and I mean that. And I think Leeds, as a club and as a city, adore him. Mm. And I think it would be a real shame if he was overlooked for the Euros as well.
Speaking of overlooked, what's Bamford got to do to get an England call-up?
Don't. I mean, I was surprised. It's difficult, isn't it? Every person who... every team has supporters who thinks that their striker should be... England. And that's the position that there's just too many really good strikers for the England squad. I thought it would be Bamford. I thought Bamford would at least be in with more of a shot that he was at. I know that Gareth Southgate was at a lot of the games where Bamford scored fairly recently. There was the Fulham one. What was the one before? Who did we play before Fulham?
The Fulham game, I think you had Chelsea in 0-0, but then there was the Southampton game where he scored.
Southampton. He, of course, scored that beauty against Palace, which must have been sweet for him. I think it's a real shame, and I think it's tough because every player, every team has got something to offer for an international squad, I think. But I do think Bamford, a bit like what we were just saying about Phillips, I think he's got that maturity and I think he's got that, he's got a good head on his shoulders. I think he's got a good way of looking at things. He's not an emotional player, as in I don't think you'd have to worry about him getting feisty. I don't think, which I don't think you've got in Ollie Watkins, frankly. I think he's, it's one of them, isn't it, where you start to notice that if you're attracting drama and you're the common denominator.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that as, again, Villa fans will say, oh, well, you would say that. I say that about Diego Llorente for us. It's not a coincidence that drama follows Diego Llorente because he's spicy. He's really, really spicy. He's like a little Jack Russell. He can't let it go. He can't let it go. And you see it differently in players like Phillips and Bamford, who walk away and keep their head above it. So I think Bamford was, he was overlooked.
Yeah, I think, I mean, for me, he was, it shocked me similarly, like you were saying, over Ollie Watkins. Because don't be wrong, Ollie Watkins had that great start for Aston Villa, which is like the dream debut.
Sure.
He's been a little bit quiet since. And Bamford, to me, I mean, I just got the results up. He is scoring consistently. I mean, 14 goals in one season, in your debut season in the Premiership. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Not get looked at once, I think, is so unfortunate.
And I think we all knew Dominic Calvert-Lewin had quite rightly in his place. But I think there's so many we've got, and I know Vardy's only recently been back on Vardy form, but I thought James Maddison was in with a shot as well. I think he, when we're talking about making, you know, debut, starting the season, James Maddison is incredible, and really lifting the worries of people who see Leicester as a one player dependent team. So it's, I think there was a lot of people who it could have been, but I do think Bamford, as you say, that the numbers under Bamford are phenomenal. His goals per game, it does feel, I'm going to use the U word again, unfair for Bamford to be overlooked. But
how do you think we're going to, 27 years old? I mean, that's the thing. He's in his prime.
Yeah, that's rough, because if he's you know, are we really sat here going, oh, but when he's 31, he'll be great for the World Cup? So that's. Yep.
I always think you've got to be careful with players like that, because he is able to play for Ireland. And eventually it will come to a point. I mean, I don't know the guy, but I'm with a lot of players. I mean, look at like Wilfred Zaha, player who really should have earned his place under Roy Hodgson, didn't get it, and now, you know, plays for Ivory Coast.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, there are other options out there for international football.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised then if he went down that path. I didn't know that.
But how do you think we're going to get on in Euro 20 or 21?
It's difficult, isn't it? Because I think you've always got that problem anyway of getting a sense of cohesive play from essentially the best players from a selection of teams who all have such a specific style of play. And maybe that's actually why Leeds haven't offered up more than just one player, because we've got such a specific, this Bielsa ball is a very specific game we're playing. And it's a lot, I imagine, to unlearn. But I don't know what goes on in the coaching rooms of other, you know, teams. But there's always the issue of getting some sort of cohesive play from a pick and mix, essentially. However, you then factor in the disruptions that this season has had. Like, it's been a big enough ask getting these players back to the form that they play for their club, and settling into that style of play, to then break and play possibly with a different style. It's a big ask. I do think the team that they've got is good. Mm. I would have swapped out a few, but I don't ever look at England and go, we've got it in the bag there. It's and maybe that's the Leeds mentality creeping in again, but I think it's going to take a lot, and it's going to be a long work in progress to get a team that reflects like those golden years that you were talking about earlier of Rooney and Giggs and Lampard and Terry. That England team, Ferdinand, that England team felt, that was the last time I remember feeling England's blooming got this.
And then the interesting thing about that is I think that they're always labelled the golden generation. Yeah. They didn't achieve anything. And it was like they seemed to have issues up here when it came to it. They had all the talent, but there was so much rivalry between the clubs at the time. You used to have like what they called them the top four. True. So do you think, and it seemed that with it, and this time, ironically, with 2018, we didn't have the skill, with all respect to some of the players. You know, we had like Ashley Young.
And I do think where we've gone wrong in the past with England selections is we've gone with the big names. Mm. We've gone with the staples. And I think that was a huge move of Southgate to leave out Alexander Arnold. And I think it's perhaps an indication of you're not going to pass on your name alone, on your record alone. I'm going off what I'm seeing when I'm coming and watching you get, which is why I was surprised Bamford didn't make it in. But he's clearly going off what he's seeing right here, right now, as opposed to going, oh, Alexander Arnold, he's good. Yeah, he's already, and just, I think nobody's seat was safe.
Yeah.
Is what I'm getting at when you're making a selection. And maybe that's what England need, and that does feel a departing from previous years.
And we got he seems to have the mentality side sorted out, which I think was the big issue with that golden generation. Mentally, they weren't prepared. I mean, it sounded like, you know, playing under, there was an interview out recently with Ben Foster. He just seemed to make out that life under Capello was miserable. Like he had them like an army camp. It was horrible. Yeah. Whereas Southgate's made it fun and all that. But the one thing I feel that Southgate does seem to lack a little bit is the kind of tactic side of things. Right, you know, he's great mentally with the players. Absolutely fantastic. And that's what I think literally took us to that semi-final in World Cup 2018. But skills-wise, you do need someone like Bielsa. You need, that's what I think he's lacking from his coaching team, is someone to come in and go,
tactical
right,
play.
Yeah, that's play Foden here, Madison here, let's have Kane here, and let's play this. We seem to just lack that kind of creativity, really, which concerns me. So with that in mind, do you think Bielsa has got the right balance between tactical genius, which he's proved he's got, and a good, a happy locker room?
He's so hard to work out. He's so hard to read. And again, in terms of the locker room, I can only go off how the players talk about him, which is just an overwhelming sense of respect and admiration for him. And then in the Take Us Home documentary, there's a little bit of footage here and there but even then, it's the scenes following the promotion, so they're all elated. You know, there's not going to be somebody, you're not going to spy Cooper pulling him aside going, Bielsa, I would just like to chat about this aspect. From what I can see and from what I can sense from the style of play is that it is a happy locker room. I imagine it's a very intense locker room. But I think intense can be good if it's done in the right way and not, as you say, what people talk about when we hear about Fabio Capello in charge of England. I think that sounds miserable. You use the word miserable. Mm. I don't think you've got that with Bielsa. I think if anything, you've got extremely passionate. Do you know what? I think with Bielsa, I think you've got the tactics. You've got the tactical, but I think it's as much about what Bielsa doesn't say as what he does say.
Right, that's interesting.
And I think you see this in the post-match interviews, and it's not just a language thing, but I think he's difficult to read, but also he makes it abundantly clear when he's not happy and it's not enough hasn't been done and his expectations haven't been met. And I imagine he's quite intense in that sense for the players, that it feels a lot of pressure to impress him as opposed to not getting in trouble from him. I think it's a desire to impress him, a desire to be better. I think when you hear about, like, the Take Us Home documentary is really good for this, for talking about his roots as an Argentinian in that sphere, because that's intense. That's intense. And that it goes back to that Godfather thing we were discussing of when somebody comes with an air of being the Don, being the I guess you have it. The only similarity I can think of is with, but I think it's overdone, is Jose with his The Special One.
Yeah.
There's an air of something about somebody.
Yeah.
The difference is Jose calls himself The Special One. And it's sort of like it feels like a PR thing that he's trying to put across. Whereas I think it's absolutely genuine with Bielsa.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite funny, isn't it? Because I had, going to that Mourinho comparison there, is that I had my head bitten off by the Chelsea fan we had on here because I mentioned The Special One. He was like, he never actually said that. He went, if you go back and watch, he says, I am a special one. And it's like, but that's no argument when he's doing
Such a Chelsea thing. I know.
And it's not an argument when he's doing Paddy Power adverts, talking to a dog saying, I am a special one. Or in the back of a taxi saying, I'm a special one to promote a gambling
don't tell
website.
Me that's not a name he's keen on.
I hope you're enjoying this episode so far with Maisie Adam talking about Leeds United. We're about to talk about her jump into stand-up comedy about 6 years ago. Now, if you are a newish comic or you're thinking of giving comedy a go, there is some great advice coming up here, very much worth listening to. In fact, it's some advice that I've taken on myself now. So from Leeds United and football to stand-up comedy.
I want to talk about stand-up because my first gig was about 4 years ago. And when I tell people it was 10 minutes, my first set was 10 minutes, they go mad. They're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Especially in London, in the open mic scene. They're like, whoa, 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 whoa. You went straight in with 10 minutes? You had 5 minutes? Yeah. You went straight 10 minutes? I heard that your first set was an hour long.
Yeah.
What? How? What happened?
It was, so this is back up in Yorkshire, and I'd graduated from uni and was stuck sort of like working temp jobs, living at home with mum and dad. And I lived in like quite a rural village, in North Yorkshire, and there was no comedy nearby. I wanted to just go and see comedy just to like see what it was about, with an idea of like maybe, you know, and I could maybe do it one time, but nothing, thinking nothing seriously of it. But there was no comedy nights near me. Like you'd have to go into Leeds, but even then Leeds doesn't have a dedicated comedy club. You know, you're talking going into like bars, near the Corn Exchange, going downstairs, and there's all these people packed in where the next night it could be a band or whatever. So I was just trying to find somewhere where I could give it a go. And there was a literature festival happening in a town called Ilkley, just outside Leeds. And I think maybe as part of their funding, they were like, oh, we can get like performers from the local area. Mm. That'd be great. And so I applied and said, oh, can I do stand-up comedy, please? They were like, oh, you can do, you know, local people, we want you to be part of this fringe festival in Ilkley.
Yeah.
You could do slam poetry, you could do dance, you could do, I don't know, like a play or whatever.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, yeah, can I do stand-up comedy? Typed it in on the little application form, sent it off. And they came back and were like, yep, you've got a slot. It's Thursday, 8 o'clock, and it's for an hour. But I didn't think that was weird. Like, when you go see a comedian, you know, if Jimmy Carr comes to the City Varieties, he's doing at least an hour. If you buy the DVD of your favourite comedian, it's got a running time of like 90 minutes. So I was like, yeah, all right, great. So I just wrote down what I guess I would talk about, you know, little observations that I'd been writing here and there, memorised it all. My mate, Katie, her dad had like a really good camera, and I asked him if he'd film it, and he did. And then I just used that footage to like send to promoters. Brilliant. Like all across the country. They'd be like, oh yeah, if I've not seen you before, you need to send me a clip. Most people sending them like a 2-minute clip. I was sending them like an hour, thinking I was Billy Big Bollocks, you know. People go, oh, have you got a type five? Have you got a type five? Like, mate, I've got an hour. I've got an hour. So yeah, it was quite a organic, I suppose, start. But I think it went for me, to be honest, because it meant that I think it's really easy with stand-up to get into your own head about it and to question everything beforehand and go, oh, is this good enough? Is this good enough? And I've seen it with a lot of the comics that I've come up through with who have perhaps not got the rise as quick as I think they should have. And often it's because, like, well, you know, you've taken forever to build up a 10, to build up a 20, because you're obsessed with fine tuning it. Just do it. Just go and do it. And I think, I guess it's a bit of a, you know, we could make parallels with football here of using the young players. And I think that the only way you're going to learn is to be put to the test. So it's silly trying to, I guess the comedy equivalent would be being given 3 minutes of playing time in extra time. You know, every like, you're never gonna learn what it takes to be a Premier League footballer by getting 3 minutes at a time every now and then. Whereas I guess went and played the full 90 minutes.
That's your debut in a cup final. But it's an interesting point you make there, though, because that was what I was going to ask, which was, you know, when you start out, you're always told stage time, stage time, stage time.
Yeah.
And it can take some early open micers to get an hour's worth. You know, it can literally take however many gigs, 10, 20 gigs to get that much you get in an hour. So in that sense, do you think going in with that hour, did that make you feel more relaxed on stage, do you think, before you started doing other gigs? Because that's a whole hour to sort of settle in.
I think so. And I think when you're on stage, like literally on stage with the mic in your hand, and you're aware that you've got 59 minutes more to go, you're less overthinking each tiny detail. Whereas if you're thinking, right, I've got 5 minutes, this next joke, I've got to say it like this, you can't think like that for an hour. So it's, you just crack on. Like you don't overthink all the tiny bits because there's too many. It's one big massive set. So, and I think that was definitely for me the better way in, I suppose, of trimming the fat, you know, going in with something and then over time being like, right, I can probably cut that bit, or like I don't need to spend as long as on this bit, or there's a better, you know, topper for the end of that joke. Rather than going in with nothing and trying to build on it, because then you get those awful sets where, like, yeah, they've got a laugh, and then you can tell the comedian's been like, oh, that got a laugh, I'm going to do another 7 minutes on that one joke. You're like, no, move on, like keep it moving. So it's different for everyone as well, though. Like, I think some people do really well. They will, I mean, I've previewed with comedians who turn up with a notebook and it's written out in long form, like a blooming diary. And I'm like, how are you reading that? And that's their show, and they'll stick to it, and they'll, you know, write little notes of like, you know, just tick that one didn't go right, that, you know, and it's on sentences, full on sentences, the jokes are written out. Whereas I think I'll turn up to do an hour preview, and on the paper we'll just be like, maybe 8 words.
Really?
I'll say like, yeah, I'll say like train. Wow. And I'll know that's like 10 minutes on how I got the train in,
Brilliant.
And it's an anecdote about this. Do you know what I mean? Because I also think there's no way of saying this without sounding like an absolute knobhead who thinks they're really, really naturally funny. But you've got to give yourself, you've got to trust that the reason you're doing this is because there's an element of you being naturally funny somewhere. And let me be clear, I'm not saying go into a gig and just trust you'll be naturally funny. That is how everybody dies on their arse. But if you've filled out your notepad with written down jokes, you're not giving yourself any room to be just present in the room and make a little observation about, like, I don't know, if a massive fuck off bumblebee starts coming round here, you're not going to just soldier on with the joke that's written down, are you? You're going to talk about that. If somebody streaks through the venue, or if somebody drops a glass, everyone's going to go away, and you need to be able to deal with that and not just soldier on about your joke about trains. You've got to like be able to adapt. So, well,
I don't think it makes Shan like a knobhead at all, and I do think you're naturally funny, very funny, and I'm so jealous of that fact that you can have 8 words and do an hour preview from it. I am very much one of these people who has to, I am quite particular with the wording of a joke, and I'm annoyed that I am. And
but I mean, saying that, I have 100% got to 40 minutes before and then been like, well, I've said everything I came here to say, and then just had to do 20 minutes of crowd work.
But you're able to do that, and that's amazing that you can literally get to 40 minutes and go, right, guys, I've done this now. Let's have a chat. I think that's brilliant. I think that's like so good to do. But
I'm often like, some it'll be like, when I think of what makes it into a show, an Edinburgh show, so many times when like you're touring that show and, you know, like somebody will go, oh, where did that joke come from? Like, how did you think? And it'd be like, honestly, it came spontaneously from a bumblebee coming on stage in the thing, or like it was just something. Whereas the stuff that you've written down 9 times out of 10 will be like, be all right, it'll be a titter, but you've got to trust yourself that you can still be present in there, especially with things like Edinburgh. When you're in the same room every day, there's nothing worse when you go and watch someone and you can tell that this is the 33rd time that they've said these words in this order over and over. It starts to sound like a sermon.
Well, I suppose, do you see the comparison with you doing drama and obviously plays at uni? Can you see the difference sometimes between someone in the moment doing stand-up and someone doing a one-man play?
Yeah, 100%. I think that's why I like that freedom element of it, is that like with drama, your job is to read what's written down in that script, and the only sort of freedom you have is how you say it, but not what you say. Whereas that's what comedy is all about. You have total control on both what you say and how you say it, when you say it. You don't have to do it in that order that night. You can turn up to the Nottingham Glee and do this bit there and that bit there. It's all your choice. And so that's an amazing thing to have, that choice. So have fun with it. Don't see it as something of like, oh God, I've got to regiment it. I've got to make sure No, have fun with it, because they can soon tell if you're not having fun with it. And there's nothing, again, this is going to sound really wanky and quite melty, but there's nothing nicer than when you're watching somebody you can tell is having a right good time. And I think it always shows when you go and see a touring comedian, if they are very clearly just being like, get me back into that travel lodge so I can FaceTime my wife. Or if they're like, I can't believe I'm here tonight. This is great. Thank you so much for coming out and spending your money to see me. You know, I think it's really, really readable. So.
No, definitely. And I was going to say as well, I think your point about how people have become so regimented, especially in the early days of stand-up. Like I said, so I had a similar thing to you, where I'm living in Swindon and there's nothing here. You know, there's a reason Mark Lamar and Ivo Graham left, put it that way, you know, and they don't gig here very much. There's nothing here at all. There's no open mic night show. So I do all my sort of stuff in Bristol mainly, which is a great place to do stand up. I absolutely love it. It's great for doing, for me, getting on, you know, pro nights and, you know, paid gigs, and it's the best place I find to try material as well, at the open mics and everything. And the thing is, when you sort of gig in the Southwest, all the opportunities you get from wherever you are, they're always 10 minutes, always 10 minutes. Yeah. And then once I got to about sort of 10 to 15 gigs, I said, right, I want to go to London now and do this. And because they're all 5 minutes. And it's a bit like I was saying earlier, people were shocked to hear that you were already doing 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And they're like, but you need to get your type five. You do your type five and then you do your 10 minutes. You know, how can you do your 10 without your five? And it's like, but I found it easier because what I could do maybe in those 10 minutes was find my type five.
Yeah.
Through the time I had, and then from that take the best bits of it, go right in those 10 minutes I got this amount of laughs, I can just condense them down, there's a five. And did you find
I
that when you
that
did
whole side of the and it is the open mic as and as you get fed, but the rules, the unspoken rules that people, and it's people who proper gatekeep comedy, being like, you need to be on doing your fives, then do your tens, then do. There's no rules. If you're good, you're good. And it doesn't matter if you're doing 5, 10 or 15 or 20. And just because you've done lots and lots of fives doesn't mean it's a good five and therefore you should get a 10. You can watch somebody absolutely storm it with a five and then you can watch someone slug through a 20. But I used to hate that when people, like, just even just the way they talked about it, of like, like there was a route. There's no route. There's no route. Each gig's different. Each gig will be different about timing-wise. No. And also, most importantly, like, it's such a comedian's perspective to talk about it in the, like, fives and then the tens and then whatever. It's not about them. It's about the audience. They've come for a nice night. They're not looking at their watches going, oh, he's done 5 minutes 20. They don't care.
Exactly.
They don't care. If they're laughing, great. Great.
Yeah.
You know,
that's spot on. And have you, I assume, like many others, you've I know you've done obviously some television work during lockdown, but you must be missing the live shows so much. And have you got any plans now things are start as we record this, things are looking like there's at least a, what they call the roadmap of things to get back to normal. Have you got things booked in?
Yeah Whether or not they'll happen or not, I don't know. It's really strange. Like, I'm being booked for stuff and I still see it in my diary, like, penciled in. I don't want to let myself, like, I've not even booked the trains or anything. Do you know what I mean? Because I'm like, I don't want to let myself believe it's going to happen and then have to go through the whole depressing thing of getting a refund and all of that. So we'll see. It's tricky, isn't it? Because the stuff, like, every day the stories are so different. So the other day I had an email from the person who's booking Latitude checking, oh, are you still on for performing at Latitude? And I was like, I mean, I don't know who else is performing. Normally I go to Latitude just for the free ticket, I'll be honest. But because of what's going on, they haven't announced their full lineup. So I'm like, I don't even know if I'm going to want to stick around for the whole weekend because I don't know who else you've got on. It's limbo again. It is limbo again.
Yeah. it's Leeds United in 2012, 2010.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, hopefully it all comes back and you don't have to cancel anything. I take it you would have lost some, like, I take it you had stuff sort of over the summer and then stuff taken away, like a lot of people.
I was in Australia when this first kicked off.
I'd been in
Adelaide for a month and was meant to go straight to Melbourne. And it was like getting on the last ship out of Armageddon because
really,
we'd done a month in Adelaide. We're meant to be doing we had like 4 days off, and then we're going to go to Melbourne. And it was all like, oh, I think this is actually starting to be a bit more serious than we thought. But we were like, it's fine. And then they pulled the Melbourne Grand Prix, and I remember it because people were in the queue. They pulled it whilst people were in the queue to get into the Grand Prix.
God.
And they were turning them away at the ticket office being like, I understand you've got a ticket, but the event that this ticket is for is no longer existent. And that was when I was like, oh, this is quite real actually. And like, all of the organisers were having these crisis talks, And then we just all got like the heads up from somebody who'd clearly been in the meeting and was like, it's been cancelled, it's not going ahead. And then it was just, you just got all these British acts, well, from all over, international acts, trying to get home on a flight. It was really, really strange. Really, really strange.
Did you find yourself on a plane with like loads of acts?
Yeah. It was so weird. Like everyone was just sort of, there was people taking like, we had to like stop over in Doha.
Yeah.
There were people being like, that's not even where I need to go, but it's nearer there. So I'll just work my way, like basically hitchhiking on planes trying to get home. It was absolutely mad. And even then I remember like I came home and I was recording an episode of QI and Sandy Toksvig was like, obviously there's no audience, which is strange, but I'll just do an announcement at the top to the camera saying, oh, we filmed this during the coronavirus pandemic back in March, so that's why there's no audience. And it went out maybe like September or something, just gone. And obviously that was when we were like right in the midst, like, oh, of course it was long term. And then I actually filmed it 2 days ago again, a year on from the exact same time last time. No audience, the exact same thing. It was just normal now, you know. Makeup artists are not allowed to touch you.
Yeah.
Just really strange that it's become normal now. And I can remember sitting in makeup this time last year for it and us all being like, do you think it's as serious as...
Yeah.
As it's, and people were going, oh, yeah, no, I think it's going to get really, really bad. I think it's going to get really, really bad. And I remember just being like, fuck, you know, a lot of people are quite worried about this. And now obviously we know what we know and it's
really rough. Yeah. But hopefully, as I said, so it must be strange for you doing like an episode of QI, obviously being aware of what QI is and how it all plays out, but there not being an audience there and it not feeling kind of normal.
It's so weird because like I've done a couple of other things in this weird era, like Mock the Week, they get a Zoom audience in and you can see them all and it's not the same, but it's fine. But Mock the Week is quite fast paced and joking all the time. QI often is just facts. And so it kind of felt like I'd gone round for dinner. I was on with Lee Mack, Alan Davis, obviously Sandy and Joe Brand. So it just felt like I was out for dinner with like a few people, like people older than me, you know, not being rude, but as in like I was out for dinner with my mate's parents and we were all just sharing quite geeky facts about each other and we'd make funny observations, as is our job, but it was really just each other that we had to bounce off. So it was really strange. It did feel like a dream. You know, like you can imagine waking up from a dream being like, oh my God, I had a dream. I went for a curry with Jo Brand and I was just reeling off facts to her and she was having to humour me. Do you know what I mean? It was basically that. That's my job now. How sad is that?
Oh, brilliant. Oh, brilliant. Well, let's have another Leeds fact.
Yes.
That's brilliant. I love that.
It's a funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
Emergency Leeds fact. Leeds' most capped player of all time is Lucas Radebe. I think it's Redaby?
Yeah.
Who has played 61 times for South Africa. And the Kaizer Chiefs band named themselves after the football team because he used to play for them.
Absolutely. Yes.
There we go.
You've nicked one of my facts.
Is that one of your facts there?
Well, he's in my fantasy football that you asked me to prepare.
Yes.
So that was going to be my little facts about Kaizer Chiefs with a Z.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what then, that's a great time to then let's start with your five-a-side team of cult like heroes from Leeds United. Who's in there?
Okay. So Lucas Radebe is centre back.
Yeah.
If you could pretend that I've just come out with that killer fact about the Kaizer Chiefs and be like, Maisie is so knowledgeable. Joe Brand didn't appreciate it. Then I think obviously you've got to pick someone you got to pick someone for your keeper. And I think I might have picked him on the last podcast about Leeds, but I'm going to edit it slightly.
Okay.
So my choice is Paul Robinson because he was safe hands growing up, right? Paul Robinson in goal. However, I'm going to give him Ilian Melia's hands.
Okay. That's interesting.
I adore Ilian Melia. I think he's so talented and a huge talent considering his age. However, I will say it, and I will die on this hill, but I have never trusted a keeper so much with his hands and so little with his feet, right? I don't know what it is about Ilian Melia, but he is determined to just take his time with the ball at his feet, dribble it out, wait for a striker to hound him down, and then, not with any sense of calmness or cool-headedness, panics and not boots it to the other end of the pitch where it's safe, but instead sort of not even passes it, just sort of taps it with the inside of his foot out to one of his defenders with no real conviction. That means every Leeds fan across the country, their bumhole goes like a 50p coin all of a sudden. and it's terrifying. It's terrifying. I want him to stop it. I want him to just pick the ball up and throw it out like a normal person. I want him to be better with his goal kicks, get it down the other end, stop playing it short, basically. Aside from that, I think he's one of the biggest talents Leeds United's had in goal for a long, long time. So it's only that reason that I'm not putting him in goal for this cult team. And Paul Robinson has got it on experience. But I actually think Melia is the better keeper.
Right.
With his hands. But I just don't trust Melia's feet. So my answer is Paul Robinson with Melia's hands.
Brilliant.
Or Melia with Paul Robinson's feet.
Love it.
That's my keeper.
We'll allow that hybrid. That's fine.
Thank you. That's my keeper. Then we've got Lucas Radebe as centre back. Yeah. Up front, I've got the dynamic duo here. Two Leeds legends, Mark Viduka. Obviously.
Mm, yeah.
First name I had on the back of my shirt, Mark Viduka.
Brilliant.
And Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink. I think that's a force to be reckoned with. However, I'm very aware that there's... this is the most lead selection ever because I've completely neglected the defence. And we've got an abundance of options for a striker. The midfield's pretty solid. We've got a legend in Radebe maintaining the midfield area. And then the defence, that's Leeds, isn't it? We scurry around trying to... but it feels often like you're covering up a leak with gaffer tape with the defence of Leeds, doesn't it?
Yeah.
and so... there was a lot of options. I was trying to think for ages of, like, you know, Danny Pugh and Fraser Richardson, and I've fallen on a local legend, somebody who I'd see around town growing up, Danny Mills.
Danny Mills.
Danny Mills.
Yeah. Yes. Okay.
He's in my defence. I'm not 100% happy about it, but it's I can't say best of a bad bunch, but it's not as fruitful pickings, shall we say,
right,
as what I had for the front of the field. So yeah, we've got the Paul Robinson Ilian Melia centaur sort of hybrid in goal, Danny Mills, Lucas Radebe, and then that's six then, isn't it?
Well, we got the hybrid, Lucas Radebe.
Yes. Lucas Radebe, and then Viduka and Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink.
There we go. Yeah, I mean, it was like for a minute there, you realised that your brain just didn't allow the hybrid for a minute.
You were like,
I just cannot accept this creation of this super keeper, this super Leeds keeper. But we're allowing it. You're allowed. That's a new rule. You're allowed hybrids in this question now. especially to that to that detail.
I think Ilian Meslier will be a like legend of goalkeeping on an international scale. I do think that.
Cool. So thank you very much. That's the five-a-side team for Maisie Adam of iconic slash cult-like Leeds players, including a hybrid, which I absolutely love. Let's finish on one more Leeds emergency fact. I think you might know this one because it's quite recent. Right. In the summer of 2015, Academy Award winner Russell Crowe made inquiries into buying Leeds United, the team he supported since he was a child. The Gladiator star eventually backed out, citing it would cause time away from his family.
I like that that's the reason he backed out. Like, he didn't clock that that would be a thing when he initially made his inquiries. He was like, yeah, I can buy Leeds United and just do it from Australia. That's fine. And of course, the voice of Take Us Home.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, of course. Yeah. That didn't even register with me. But there we go. So he could have been the owner. Imagine him and Bielsa. Who would win in a fight between Russell Crowe's Gladiator and Bielsa?
Oh, I think Bielsa with the mind games. That'd just be like, you'd have Maximus, whatever his name is, the Gladiator, going round like brandishing his sword and all of this. And then Bielsa, he'd just stride up and down a few times and then stare at him, sat on a bucket. And the Gladiator would be like, nah, I'm out.
Brilliant. Well, Maisie, thanks so much for coming on Comedians Talking About Football.
Thank you for having me. It's been really good fun.
But I've got you a Leeds shirt that you may or may not. Can't even see it. Hang on a minute. Oh, yeah, okay, you can.
Is that the Enterprise Insurance one?
There we go. Is it coming through? There we go. Now, there's a special reason I've selected this shirt to send you. It's because it's from the season where you were managed by the eighth wonder of the world, Brian McDermott. He did nothing for Leeds, but he was a Reading legend. As it says on the side of our stadium, on the eighth day, God created Brian. And so I'll send that over to you just so you can wear it and just remember all those great days in purgatory with Brian McDermott and players Jimmy Kebbe.
It's got to the point where, like, my uncle, who's a massive Leeds fan, he loves this game where whenever we're out, he tries to find a lookalike, like a celebrity lookalike. Yeah. And to be honest, any bald bloke with a set of glasses on, you will just hear my Uncle Richard from the other side of the bar going, oh, Brian McDermott. It's really hard to like a guy after somebody's pointed out his likeness to Brian McDermott. So thanks for that.
There we go. That works the opposite at Reading. If any bald glasses man, we think they should get into the club for free. Free tickets for them.
Funny old game.
Thanks again to Maisie. Absolutely love that chat. Absolutely loved it. Do catch Maisie in the clubs as and when you can. She's a brilliant act. You can also follow her on social media. It's at Maisie Adam on Instagram and Twitter. Nice and easy that. And that's Maisie. Speaking of the same handle for both, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at ComTalkFootyPod. That's at ComTalkFootyPod for both Twitter and Instagram. If you enjoyed the podcast and you're new, welcome. Thanks for listening. If you're a regular, you remain welcome. Don't worry. And thanks for listening, as ever. We have a load of other episodes for you to enjoy with comedians such as Nathan Caton, David Alfie Ward, Jacob Hawley, and many others. And as ever, your listens, subscriptions, and reviews are hugely appreciated. Until next time, when my guest will be Andrew White, talking about Bournemouth. Take care.
At the end of the day, football, it's a funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
Comedians talking about football.
Comedians talking about football.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.